The SU elections have always been a key event in the union calendar, with the University of Nottingham registering one of the highest turnouts in the country. However, this year's campaigns have been marred with rumours of foul play and controversy.
It is incredibly disappointing that the Students' Union refuses to admit it has a problem.
Accusations of cheating, non-neutrality and a lack of regulation culminated in May, when an open letter signed by 11 former SU candidates was sent to the Students' Union. The letter criticised the Union Council, a body which decides the regulations and laws of our union, stating that the body had not responded correctly to a submitted proposal for reform. The response, however, has left students underwhelmed and the issues raised are yet to be fully addressed.
There was a general consensus that some candidates, I don't want to do names, did things that were completely wrong and needed to be addressed, and that the system is fundamentally broken for our elections.
URN has decided to investigate how democracy and student representation is upheld at the university following the controversy of the election, covering the key areas of the process.
You know what, there's a massive root of the problem that the students' union staff, their priority has never been a true democratic election. It's always been, for the past 4 or 5 years that I have contact in, it has been that they want to get the top percentage of voters.
After our coverage of the open letter, our news team sat down with various SU candidates to talk about their elections experience, what they thought went wrong, and why.
And I think we've got into a really bad cycle with the Students' Union of being addicted to turnout at any cost.
The Pulse investigates the Students' Union. The system is broken.
So one of the issues uncovered during the interviews was the neutrality of key groups such as Nightline and Carnival. We spoke to Emma Connor, Rachel Hoskins and Emily Mills on the issue.
But when it comes to elections, the problem is that the exec have such an influence over a large group of people. So I've been arguing that if you have such a wide reach and such a big influence on others, then you should remain neutral. So as part of other groups, such as MedSoc or UNAD, which I obviously know quite well, being involved with UNAD, like, we were required to stay neutral. And I don't see how associations are that different from SRSs.
I think an important point there is there's a difference between knowing a lot of people in a space and using that space. I mean,
yeah.
It was inevitable that a lot of the students that I've worked with in FEMS would be inclined to vote for me, but that doesn't mean that I used my influence. I could have easily used the email account to
exactly.
send out a sneaky email. I could have used all of the contacts that we've made as a work group, or I could have easily exploited all the things that I've done as a FEMS committee manager.
Exactly.
Like, the amount of stuff that FEMS in general has done for welfare is huge and usually underrated, but I didn't feel like exploiting something that I was really a part of.
Yeah.
There's exactly. such a big difference there, and I feel like that line was really blurred this year. It's just like morally a lot of these problems like are undeniable.
Yeah.
But since there's nothing in the rules about it, you could argue that it doesn't matter, but they've had such a significant impact. I think that the welfare SRSs did behave themselves well. They obviously think they did, because, you know, I mean, oh, another one. So Freya from Student Minds, I don't know if you've come across her, she makes a distinct point every year of being impartial. But the only campaigning post that she shared during the entire period was one of Katie Leach's. Saying that she was impartial, because people do look to her as not only a significant student in the Disabled Students Network, but also as being in charge of Student Minds. And it was something that she, you know, essentially went back on her word on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the undeniable fact here is that societies are so different from SRSs, because societies, in more of a way, are controlled by the Students' Union, in a way that SRSs are separate. Like, the Students' Union has no control over how Nightline, like, works. I have no idea how Carney works, but the thing is about Carney is that it's kind of a university joke now how much influence Carney has over the activities officer race.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the activities reps have been Carney for a long time, and I know that they did, this year they were planning on trying to be neutral, and I know that someone from the year above them basically whipped them, or kind of like you do it in the politics.
There was his party line, basically,
and you had to follow it. And that's what I think would be useful, to have that kind of more clearly defined neutrality, because obviously, yes, you're part of a group, so people can help you, people can be there for you, but actually to say to a whole group, especially such a large group, you have to vote for this person is one of those things.
So on the subject of neutrality, one of the issues uncovered during the interviews was the neutrality of key groups such as Nightline and Carnival. We spoke to Rachel Hoskins, Emily Mills and Enna Connor on the issues. And I think one of the things that people had an issue with is people of influence could pretty much dictate what a whole SRS could vote for. And I think this was a particular issue when it came to welfare for this elections.
And like you said, there weren't any clear rules. There was no... It wasn't. No one was breaking any rules. For example, I think in some of the interviews, Nightline's neutrality was brought up. However, there's no explicit rules saying that members of that society, especially leading members of the service, cannot come out and support. I think one of the candidates used the phrase moral obligation, and that some candidates took the line that it was their moral duty not to use their powers in a society or in a service in an unfair way, and they feel that this is something that isn't clear in the rules and that should be made a rule.
I think also something that comes up is that each society and each SRS is so different that the basic kind of guiding principles each society dictates to itself about issues of neutrality. You know, obviously, a society like JSOC might be more inclined to support or withdraw support for a candidate because the views are so kind of inherent to their beliefs, whereas other societies are a bit more of kind of pick and choose of, right, this is what our stance is. And so I think... when it comes to SRSs generally as well, you know, we're relying on them to self-regulate. And I think maybe this election we saw that there wasn't much of that self-regulation, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I'd agree. I don't think a student-run service, that itself, student-run service, and yet people within that and have the ability to sort of dictate to the students that they perhaps serve exactly what they're working with. I can imagine the uproar that there could be if URN, for example, became like, you know, took after a lot of the American media outlets in the, you know, and so threw their weight behind one candidate all the time. Just because, like, the way that stuff can be shared, or NSTV as well. It's actually worth noting, one good part of NSTV's coverage was they had these sort of 3 or 4 minute interviews where the candidates could introduce themselves. And that was so easy for, if you're campaigning, just to whack that on your page, get it shared, you know, job done. And you know, if an SRS like that just threw their weight behind one person and neglected to give the same options to everybody else, then obviously that's just, you know, it's a huge advantage for them. But one thing is, should people be disqualified for the actions that sort of happened recently? I mean, there's been extreme allegations of sort of a party line whip from Carney. And I know for a fact in last year's campaigning, one of my close friends was running for an SU position. And they said they were really, the emphasis on getting the so-called Carney vote was of tantamount importance to their campaign. Doesn't seem almost particularly fair.
I think there's a sense of, that it's inevitable that if you have been involved in Carney and you're going for activities, there you are going to have that slight advantage. I think it's to the extent you use that, and that's where it's been kind of twisted this year, especially with welfare. Because it's fine you saying that, yes, I was a member of Student Minds, I was a member of Nightline, and I did this, this, and this, but having people from that organisation come out and back you, that's wrong, I think, because it gives out an impression that this is who we want to be leading us, this is who we've picked. And it was in such an obvious way this year on Facebook. It wasn't subtle at all. And I think, yes, that action should have been taken and that grievances should have been taken seriously and that it was unfair.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, though. It's very hard to make a decision on whether the way that... you know, SRSs and people of influence within those certain groups have used their power this year. Does that mean, one, have you exposed a deeply rooted flaw in the election system? And because it, you know, whose fault is that? Where does the buck stop? Does it stop at the people who did something which isn't against the rules, but it seems in quite bad taste to the rest of the students and has changed the election? Does it stop there, or does it go further up to the people who need to organise and decide, you know, where the boundaries are set within SRSs?
I still think my view is that of self-regulation. I think it's up to, you know, we talked about how basically certain, you know, SRSs or societies will have a stranglehold over particular positions. And I think what's more shocking about the stuff that Emily Mills was talking about was not that it was simply just Carney saying, right, we're voting for this person. It was up until apparently a few days before elections, Carney was going to not do a kind of, right, this is who we support, and leave it instead up to their members. It was actually older members who aren't, you know, like part of Carney or part of the union anymore, who basically said, no, we're actually going to do it this way. And I think that's what was really quite shocking about the sway that those older members would have had.
A recurring problem mentioned throughout the interviews was the way in which grievances were handled by the SU. Here's what our interviewees had to say about it.
I think a big kind of structural issue that we're going to have, that's got to be looked at, is how we regulate, because at the moment we have a system of the candidates regulate themselves / each other. That, of course, brings people into conflict when they might be particular advantages and complain against another person. But that also can then delegitimise legitimate complaints, because the elections committee can go, oh, you're just doing this because you want to get an advantage, when actually there could be something very legitimate on the table and they've just discarded it completely. And I think the complaint system is completely broken for these elections. I think that's a core area that really needs looking at.
What I do remember is Jess being so upset after she's spoken to Rob. And me feeling very upset after I'd spoken to Rob. I mean, me and Paige went and spoke to Leilani, and she said that all you can do is speak to Rob about this. And obviously what came from that was just feeling like my issues were trivial, when really they were the same thing that everyone else was experiencing.
Feels like complaints weren't dealt with, so yeah. We were told every time that a complaint didn't go through, it was because it was unsubstantiated, it wasn't actually breaking the law. It's quite difficult to talk about, and that's, I suppose, yeah. That's another aspect of the meeting yesterday, was that Emma and I were so outnumbered by people yeah. who were often in some way against us, so Rob had been continually blocking every kind of motion we wanted. Well, every kind of complaint that we had, he would block every kind of...
He's chair of elections,
yes.
Isn't he?
So, in the context of that meeting, for example, where Rob seemed to be against every single proposal that we had, some yeah. even the least controversial ones, it seemed confusing to us that he was so against reforming yeah. elections, because I don't think anyone really thinks the elections worked fantastically this year.
Yeah, I think what needs to be kind of like reiterated is this isn't a letter that we're saying, oh, we're p***ed off because we lost.
Yeah.
That's not what it's about.
Yeah.
It's mainly, and its purpose is to basically say, yes, the elections happened and the elections have been running like this for however many years, but it does need to change, because I know, because I helped campaigning for Bramley last year, that there were kind of a few issues, but I think they were just magnified so
yeah.
badly this
yeah.
year, that it is not about, yeah, we need to change the whole system. That's not what we're going for. We're just talking about having a discussion.
Another key issue that we have to discuss is grievances, which has been a big issue this year, mainly because there didn't seem to be a clear chain of events and way to deal with complaints, and students weren't sure, once they'd submitted their grievance, what was being done with it, how it was being processed, and when they would get feedback and when it would be dealt with. Why do you think this happened? Why wasn't there a clear set a path?
Well, I think from when we were speaking to the SU candidates, there was a clear that it was a kind of an ongoing flood of grievances seeming to swamp the elections committee, which doesn't meet that regularly or at that doesn't give much notice to its meetings as well. So I think there was inevitably a backlog to these grievances and complaints. And unfortunately, that meant that some of them got lost. Others were told, sorry, there's no evidence. And I think that's a point worth making as well, is that there was a very thin line in terms of you getting testimony from someone.
Yeah, especially when you're in a competitive environment, it must be difficult for the people on the committee to judge whether this is somebody who's trying to mire someone else's campaign or whether they think this is a genuine grievance. But one of the big issues that was mentioned by many of the candidates was the way that grievances in general were perceived, and it was quite hard to dispel the idea and this image of them being bitter losers, and they felt that they weren't being taken seriously and that their grievances were considered lower than those given by students. Not that many students did hand in grievances, however they felt that they weren't trusted by Rob Jennings and by the elections committee, and felt that nobody really cared what they had to say because they were compromised by their position.
Go on.
And on that note, where you said like not many students submitted complaints, I don't think students realise that they could complain. I think one of the main issues surrounding the whole grievance, like the whole area of grievances, is that students weren't aware that having an iPad thrown in their face was wrong, and then no one would take it upon themselves as a student with a vote to take it up with the elections committee and actually submit a grievance themselves.
And I didn't know you could submit grievances. There was no one advertising, no one saying, well, there probably was somewhere, but it wasn't very obvious, saying, remember, if you feel that something's happened that you didn't like, you can contact this person, you can send a form to this person. There was no, like we've said earlier, clear chain of events and way for you to even hand in a grievance, let alone for them to deal with that grievance.
On the subject, though, of these grievances being perceived as, you know, either trying to tear down someone else's campaign or something like that, it must be very hard for Rob Jennings and the Elections Committee to look at these complaints and be able to sift through which ones are genuine and which ones aren't, and which ones they actually have concrete evidence for.
I think perhaps one thing that's worth considering is how most of the key complaints from the candidates about the grievances system was the fact that they effectively didn't get informed of anything. They sort of sent off the email and then that was it, and you hear nothing else about it, whether it's successful, whether it's been thrown out, whether there have been any consequences. And that to me is probably one of the that just seems almost ludicrous to me.
How has it run in previous years? I think there's a problem that the SU doesn't seem to review the election process the year before, and nothing changes, nothing seems to improve, because there's a, I think there's what many of the candidates said, there's the idea that there's not a problem, that there's not an issue, and a reluctance to admit that these systems aren't working.
So how do you even follow up on a suspension? The elections committee don't have a security force. There's no one to enforce these rules. That you know, you might get an email saying you've been suspended.
There is the threat of further punishment, though.
But that wasn't carried out.
But then you need physical
case.
Evidence for that. You need to submit the grievance form. It's got to be then processed.
That's
it might
true.
Not even happen
that
by the Friday.
It gets
so I
lost
think...
in that chain of bureaucracy where that there's no real chain of command, I don't think.
Well, is the solution then to create sort of an ad hoc grievance panel throughout the election campaign to deal with this? Is that the route to go down?
I think, again, it boils down to the idea of like a lack of organisation and a lack of just clear rules about what you can do, what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And I think that's a reason why quite a lot of the grievances were dismissed, or there was like controversy around them, because people weren't sure where the line was. And I think if you start off the election process with a set of clear do's and don'ts rules, then it's so much easier to say, no, you're wrong.
It was an atmosphere that was incredibly hostile, mainly because of this idea of self-management and the fact that everybody was, especially with things like the price budget, people were watching what the others were spending and panicking, saying, this person spent that much money, I need to spend this much money. People were accusing the others of cheating. I think there was very few campaigns that weren't accused of some level of foul play. And because their grievances weren't getting dealt with, that meant that they were left to go and fight it out amongst each other, which meant it was a very unhealthy competition. That's a word that has been used by several of the candidates, that it did become unhealthy.
I think one more point of discussion, though, is that what's caused the flood of complaints this year? Because it certainly wasn't as you know, or at least there weren't reports of it being as dirty and as underhanded last year or the year before. What's the cause of this? Is it the cause of it just being like it could have happened any of the years because the option was there, or, you know, a particularly dirty campaign hasn't really appeared before, and therefore the grievances sort of system hasn't been tested to the extent that it has this year? Or is it something else? Is there sort of, has the spending cap removal been sort of I'm trying to think of the word, a catalyst for it? I think it's all very interesting.
I think this the spending cap was definitely the catalyst. That's what a lot of the bickering amongst the candidates was caused by, and a lot of the suspicions.
But I think what this kind of backlog of grievances that weren't maybe dealt with, you know, the chain of communication between students and their elected representatives, or in this case, you know, the elections committee, highlights is that this perhaps stems from a wider problem within the SU and the mechanisms that operate there.
So I think we really have to ask ourselves, what are the current mechanisms in place? I really feel like I'm not alone when I say that I don't know a lot about the way my SU is run. So there are three key committees that are essential to the elections in the SU. The first one is the Democratic Procedures Committee and consists of 12 members. That's three officers and nine elected students. Those members meet at least three times a year in an open meeting, and they're kind of like the Supreme Court of the uni.
There is also an Elections Committee, which is there to ensure that guidelines for campaigning are followed by candidates and that the correct procedure for elections is followed as written in the union's governing documents. They are also responsible for reviewing budgets for campaigners and ensuring that elections run smoothly.
And finally, we have the Union Council. This is like a meeting where any student can bring a motion that aims to change something or ask the Students' Union to take a stance on a specific topic.
The meeting takes place at least once a term and is made up of 21 randomly selected panellists, who are the only people in the room allowed to vote. If a motion gains enough support and votes, then it becomes policy.
The council also has an unelected chair, and this person decides on the length of discussion and the order of discussion. The chair can also decide on whether or not to hear motions which are over the 400-word limit.
This is what happened to Scott Jennings.
So my experience was interesting somewhat. I was a student. I'm a student who has ADD, and I'm meant to get, according to the Equalities Act, recognition for that. And so the university spent a month deliberating on whether I was valid for that and went no. So that was kind of my experience. And my experience was very handicapped and very limited as to how much physical campaigning I could do. My experiences of the conduct and what happened and all the kind of controversy and why I was one of the core people who pushed forward that letter was because of my experiences of the previous election where I ran on top of this one where things got worse. So core kind of factors were iPad tactics this year was so much worse than in the previous 2 years. I'm not going to name names because I can't be bothered with any of it, but the candidates who did it know who they are and they won because they did it. And I think we've got into a really bad cycle with the Students' Union of being addicted to turnout at any cost, which really advantages those people who will do those tactics because they win. And I think we've got into a real negative spiral, and that's part of the reason why I and a lot of candidates this year stood up as opposed to the candidates last year didn't. Honestly, after the previous year's election, I wanted to do something, but there was no will there to see it happen, and one candidate standing up just sounds embittered that they lost. It was pretty much after, for me on a personal level, because I lost by only 6 votes this time, it kind of proved that as a candidate who didn't engage with these kind of tactics, you can win, but I still lost. So on that level, I was like, right, this proves that there is a will to see some change from the students, and some students don't engage with these kind of tactics. But also, having spoken with many of the other failed candidates and one or two of the successful candidates, there was a general consensus that some candidates, I don't want to do names, did things that were completely wrong and needed to be addressed, and that the system is fundamentally broken for our elections. The motion was knocked down on the most ridiculous grounds I've ever seen in Union Council. Not once has any of the provisions that were used, that are legitimately in the rules, by the way, the 400 word limit, etc., they're all legitimately written into the bylaws, but they have not been used since I've been a student, which massively brings into question why they were used. The actions of the union facilitator I have to be massively critical of, because it was her decision to do this. And if nothing else, even if the motion had failed, it actually brought debate to the floor, the debate around there is problems. I think the union needs to admit it has a problem, which is what sparked that open letter from the candidates going, this is not okay anymore. You're damaging people's mental health. You're putting people through hellish situations, as this year was. I mean, it's been this way for a number of years. 2 years ago, a number of students, because of the length of the election period, had mental breakdowns and had to be sent home when they were campaigning. And I think that's the problem, is that there is a climate of definitely fear around admitting the problems.
The union council chair, yeah. they defended their decision by saying yeah. that they didn't neglect the motion, they just referred it to another committee. But do you feel that DEPC or the EC have actually done anything about
it? Okay, so the union council has the power to override all the other councils, and that was the fundamental point, is that if we took these issues to students, discussed them with students, and proved, despite what the officers might say, that when, and there seems to be a consensus around there's not a problem or it's not that bad, when actually it is. If we proved to students in that forum how bad it was, the Democratic Procedures Committee and the Elections Committee could not then body block particular changes that might affect vested interests. I have, earlier on this year, I took a motion to the Union Council actually around restructuring the DPC, the Elections Committee, because I thought they haven't worked the best in the past. I don't think they're so broken beyond repair. But some of the core things that I took forward was the chairs of the Elections Committee and Democratic Procedures Committee should not be full-time sabbatical officers of the union. Mm. And I think when it comes to the Elections Committee, as the NUS referendum and the officer elections have shown, I've been somewhat vindicated in that stance because it has not worked. That whether that is just down to the one individual is kind of up for everyone else to decide themselves. I can't be bothered to engage with that kind of debate on a personal level. But I think when it comes to the Democratic Procedures Committee in particular, they don't meet enough. And I think this is an overarching theme of all of our kind of committees and councils, is that the Union Council only meets 3 times in a year and stuff falls off the agenda. Some motions which I submitted very early on because they lapsed from a previous council into a next one were bumped to the bottom of the pile. And there seems to be no accountability about the Union Council chair and what process has been undertaken and decided about that. I don't know what criteria has been put in place, or whether there's personal politics could be put into play. I don't know what there is. I think the conduct of officers, not particularly these officers, but for previous years, also needs to be clarified massively in the rules, because it's the totally subjective nature of the rules has allowed people to get away with murder this year. It is incredibly disappointing that the Students' Union refuses to admit it has a problem. And I think that's kind of the core of my objections, is that people lost potentially this year because of the total inadequacies of our election system, not because they weren't their candidates who probably should have won. And I think particularly our complaint system, and I mean, the golden one is iPads for me. iPads, well, tablets, all kinds of electronic voting. We don't respect the secret ballot at our students' union. We force people to vote on the spot, and you have anxiety, etc. And you want that engagement with that person throwing that iPad in your face to stop, you just do it.
I think that we can see, as we discussed earlier, about grievances and how that's a problem, and there's not the sort of tools of, available to students to be able to actually bring them through. The same with the neutrality as well. Like, there's no actual law in there. And speaking to Sam, and as well as a chat with Luke Watkins, who sits on a number of different panels within the SU, do you think that student democracy is sort of, it's just sort of, it's shunted in the dark, aside from the elections? It seems like lots of key events go on all the time, right under students' noses as they walk through the Portland building or wherever, and yet the only time that there's some sort of active involvement is when it comes down to their mates are running, and or that the uni actually put a lot of funding behind it. And just to add to that point today, the fact that only just over 2,000 people, 2,000, less than 10% of people at the University of Nottingham voted on the NUS referendum, that surely just shows that there's sort of, that there wasn't as much publicity, certainly not as much as the election stuff. Do you think that it just all sort of boils down to a very complicated and, you know, bureaucratic system in the end?
I didn't even know that there were these committees existed, for starters. I didn't know that you could vote for them, and I didn't know when these votes and when these took place. And
yeah, any student,
why don't we know that?
Any student can run for one of these committees and get a position on it fairly easily because of the lack of voting it. And I think what that highlights is there's a general feeling of students think about democracy in the SU and they think that it exists in some kind of peripheral level above them, when actually it's very much amongst them, and the decisions that are being made are actually at their level and they can engage with them. I think if there is more of an effort to say, right, these are the things that will affect you, this is how the SU will affect you, because I think, you know, so many first years fell for that iPad tactic because they didn't realize how important their vote was. And if there was a focus on, right, you know, don't just give away your vote to someone who presses an iPad in your face, actually wait and make a considered decision when you get home, then actually democracy would, rather than just this focus on turnout, there would actually be a focus on the kind of the quality of our participation and how people are actually engaging on a level that is actually quite rounded, rather than just on a very kind of, these 2 weeks that exist in the union calendar, where suddenly it seems that, you know, the whole of University Park is swamped with campaigners.
Yeah, I agree. I think there seems to be a kind of distinct, it's either a distinct lack of interest or just a distinct, like, shocking amount of ignorance from all students throughout the university who just aren't aware that there's a union council with a democratic procedures committee, with an elections committee, with a scrutiny panel as well. There's so many opportunities for students, like anyone, like you, me, student officers, everything, to get involved and have an active part in important decisions that are made and affect the uni.
But potentially the reason why there is such a delay in them organising meetings, it's so unorganised and there's such a backlog, is because students don't know about them. They don't really care if these committees aren't working very well, or if they are in a bit of a shambles, because we just don't know. There's no one to impress, there's no image to uphold, because no one really knows they exist, because it's not advertised, and or at least it's not advertised effectively. I think something else we've also got to consider is the amount of power the union council has, and in particular the union council chair, which is an unelected chair who has the power to decide the length of discussion and the order of discussion, and also they can dismiss motions. And that has happened this year with the dismissal of a motion that was, I think, over a 400 word limit.
I think the more worrying thing for me is that not only are they unelected, but they're also unaccountable. You can actually hold your SU officers to account through the scrutiny panel, but the person who's the scrutiny panel facilitator is the union council chair, so you can't hold them to account for their actions. And basically an unelected, unaccountable position made sure that there would be no discussion on democracy and electoral reform this year. I think that's a big issue. I think if students were more aware of that, because of this lack of publicisation of what the union council and what democracy in the SU does generally, there wasn't much of a student reaction apart from the people who obviously felt very hard done by this decision.
No, exactly. I think what we have with Scott James' motion about, you know, electoral reform and everything, what we have is someone's taken it to the union council, it's been denied at the union council, being justified with an extremely archaic rule that's never really implemented. It's then been deferred to the Democratic Procedures Committee, who have then kind of placed it at the bottom of the pile due to a huge backlog, and it hasn't been discussed, and we have no idea. It's not going to be discussed this year because they rarely ever meet, and who knows if it's going to be discussed next year. And then we have a lot of very upset people who are not going to get anything, who have approached a council that's meant to speak to them, is meant to deal with their issues, and they're going to be left like with nothing.
And I think that the electoral reform is something actually students would be interested in. It is one of those rare things where the SU could actually motivate a lot of students to get involved and be interested in their SU and the way it's run. Because if I remember, we've been speaking to Sam Peake, and say other people have been saying there's not an interest there, or students just don't come and they don't come to the meetings and they don't vote. It's either because they don't know about it, or because they're not things like something really exciting and interesting like electoral reform, which offers a opportunity for lively debate, just is pushed back and not given any limelight. And that's ridiculous.
Well, Gabby, you're talking about you know, if this was even going to be brought up in, you know, committees like democratic procedures or elections next year, this electoral reform. And Sam Peake did say that now these discussions will be moved to democratic procedures committee next year. But I think what we see there is another backlog for next year. You know, what if another important issue is raised, but you know, the next year's elections committee are still dealing with last year's backlog, and this year's committee was still dealing with last year's backlog of a referendum, which Sam mentions in his interview. And I think that really highlights the wider problem in what is, I think, a broken system. And I think I would call on our incoming SU officers to try and mend that system, try and make sure that it works for student representation, and to try and make sure there is a more active engagement with students. And I think that would see both positive changes in our democracy and also the general elections experience for everyone involved.
We spoke to your communities officer, Sam Peake, about this issue.
Well, they weren't unaccountable in the sense that we're talking about it now. You know,
but I can't remove them from office through whatever. At least I don't think so.
I'm trying to think whether you can or not. I don't think you can, because they're, as you say, a student. Let's just get this in perspective. They're a student themselves who is, I think, getting paid a small amount, but basically they're doing a job because they really care about union democracy and want to make the best decisions that they possibly can. So we talk about unelected bureaucrats and things like that. We need to remember who we're talking about.
I just feel
like
maybe that there's a slight issue in that for something that is, you know, a cornerstone of democracy like elections, that it is that these decisions are being handed over. Although, you know, I accept, obviously, it's not some kind of mysterious figure I know nothing about as a student who obviously is engaged with the democratic process. I just think, you know, it's also harder to put, you know, a face to these people than it is obviously with student officers.
Well, that's true to a point, but I saw the facilitator of Union Council go through a process where she read all of the governing documents very, very closely and cared very deeply about the decision she made and the importance of getting it correct. So I have no doubt of her ability to continue to do a good job in that role. Should there be a mechanism by which Union Council itself, you know, can hold its chair to account? Possibly. Officers themselves need to be held to account by these democratic committees, and as such they shouldn't have a majority on them, although they may have a good insight to bring to bear to the committees.
When it comes to kind of a broader issue of democracy, I think students would be very interested, and maybe I definitely think there is a case for more advertisement of these things, more advertisement that you can run, because we didn't know you could run for a place on these scrutiny panels, that it is open to everyone. And I think, you know, students would be much more inclined to get involved if there was a feeling of, right, these democratic panels don't operate above me, they're actually something which I can do in my everyday capacity.
And I agree with you, we need to be advertising these positions more, but I'll ask you a question. When the student union sends you an email, do you always open it?
I don't know.
And if we sent you more emails on a sort of weekly basis, would you be more or less inclined to open them?
But do you not think maybe...
Answer is an interesting question, isn't it?
You know,
would you be more or less inclined if we sent you more emails?
I think there's different routes of advertisement. You know, you could put this up on the TV screens that we have in Portland. I think I agree with you. Spam in your email isn't good. But I think, you know, if you look at one route of advertisement, which is the emails, which you have access to everyone, but you also have visual access to everyone. We also have, you know, you have the whole board outside the student offices, which shows all the people who are your student offices.
Yeah.
You know, there's also space for you to park right. This is where you should get involved. You can put it up on the TV screen. So I think, obviously, emails, maybe they're not the best route of communication. And I think everyone is, of course, guilty of neglecting their student email sometimes. But I think, you know, there needs to be, or maybe, you know, for kind of at least something to be taken note of next year, that advertisement for democracy needs to be kind of planted at the core of stuff like Welcome Week as well.
Well, what I would say to you is watch this space, because I'm aware of the need to promote democracy.
Following URN's discussion with candidates, we sat down with Sam Peake to ask him about the grievances, neutrality and Union Council.
If you want to listen to the full interview, you can go to audioboom.com/urnspeech.
I'm Sam Peake. I'm the community officer, the outgoing community officer, for the year from 2015 to 2016.
Do you think there's an issue maybe that talking about union council and stuff like that, that students aren't maybe aware of all these mechanisms that are in place? And perhaps if they're a little bit more aware, there would be much more engagement and kind of much bigger realization of how to get involved with student democracy.
Yes.
Do you think there's steps that, you know, what steps do you think could be taken to get this awareness out there? And maybe why weren't these steps taken this year?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. As a, one of the things which, you know, I've done this year is ask our democracy coordinator, who is a, you know, a paid member of staff to look at these things. She's produced a lengthy document. It runs to around 14 pages, which I've seen, which basically comes up with a lot of proposals of how we're going to be publicising the democratic institutions of the union better. So as part of the, you know, review, which is looking at how the Portland building's going to look in future, that's part of what we're trying to say, is how can we capture more that democracy is a big part of what your student union should be doing, so it's visible within the physical space of the building. I absolutely agree with that. We also need to be doing more advanced promotion of union council and democratic procedures committee and scrutiny panel and all these important democratic meetings on our social media. We need to be promoting them through not just what the committee is, in a sense of what the committee is constitutionally, but actually what are the things which it's going to be discussing, because it's often the substantive items of business which are going to be more appealing to people to come in and listen to and engage with. We need to be making sure that members of who are representatives in their own right. So, for example, a committee member, you know, of a society or group which might be particularly affected by the passing or not of a certain motion, that they're, you know, they're called in and are engaging with it and actually invited into the meeting to give their view. I mean, at Democratic Procedures Committee, I think we've been more successful in doing this, because when a motion, for example, we're ratifying a constitution of an associated union body or something, then we always have the president come in of that body and speak to that effect. But no doubt in other areas, for example, union council, we can be more effective at doing that. And I've, you know, one of the things I've done this year is commission that piece of work to be done so that it can be taken forward next year as a matter of priority to discussing that.
But surely this kind of also points to maybe a wider problem, where you did have this backlog that you had to deal with the first motion, and that, you know, you only have, I think it's 3 or 4 meetings for DPC, isn't it, in a year. Mm-hmm. And surely, you know, you have to make the time for motions like this. And, you know, unfortunately, we're running out of time this year. It's unlikely, I guess, that we'll see another DPC meeting this year. Surely this points to a wider problem, that if things were processed quicker and there wasn't such this backlog, then student motions would get more time.
Yes. If there wasn't a backlog to clear, then that would be so. But there is a backlog to clear. And it is, if a lot of those motions were generated, just to explain, by the passing of one referendum in election period 3, and that basically created five motions for DPC to consider. So DPC was on track with its business as such. It didn't have a backlog until a referendum was passed during the third election period, which is the officer election period. You may remember logging on and voting, and there was a question which said, you know, should your SU officers be more accountable? Which, you know, is obviously a question to which the obvious answer is yes. But the actual motion itself contained four or five pages long, I believe, in terms of detailed procedural rules for the union to enact, and that's what's created a backlog of agenda items needed to be discussed at DPC.
And so with this backlog, why aren't there more meetings? Do you feel that maybe there's a certain element of administration and bureaucracy that sometimes gets in the way of real change? For example, in that Union Council meeting where the Union Council chair decided not to hear the motion about electoral reform, they also ran out of time to hear a motion about setting up another Union Council meeting. It's kind of...
No, they didn't.
I think... Are we sure on that?
Yeah. What happened was... The Union Council was held very close to exam time. And so just to explain how it works, you need a minimum of 16 jurors to make what you call core decisions at Union Council, i.e. decisions which can actually be taken into effect. And we had 15. So the meeting was delayed for about 15 minutes while we were waiting for the 16th guy to turn up. And he didn't. Which is unfortunate, given we invite 20 people. So actually 5 people that said they were going to turn up, which didn't, which is, a shame. So we could have cancelled the whole meeting, but we didn't want to do that. I particularly didn't want to do that. I said, right, now what we'll do is we'll think on our feet and we'll hold a meeting, which will be a sub-core at REFA meeting, but the minutes of which can be ratified at the first Union Council of next year. What obviously a sub-core at meeting couldn't do is decide that it was going to have another meeting because it didn't have the quorum level to do that, if you see what I mean. So that's why that agenda item was voluntarily removed by the proposer of it. It's democratic tennis in a way and gymnastics, but that was just the unfortunate situation we were in.
Isn't the kind of the problem that you highlight there with kind of 5 people not turning up? Isn't there a case maybe for a bit more? Obviously you did take a proactive decision to kind of think on your feet, but like I said, a lot of the people who wanted that Union Council meeting to happen later this year won't be here next year to see the changes. And so do you not think that maybe without the student pressure, there'll be less inclination to change?
I think people recognise that there are certain things around the elections process that need to improve. The way we deal with grievances needs to get better, needs to be more efficient. We need an elections committee which is able to be more responsive during the elections process to complaints as they come in. We need complaints, actually, to be coming in during the election cycle itself, not on the final hours of the final day, when in reality it's very difficult to do anything about it, of course, because the election's happened. So we need that education as well as to what the powers of elections committee are, what the remit of elections committee is. So I absolutely don't think that these weaknesses, which were identified, I think, correctly in some respects by the candidates, is going to be lost. Because I know in myself that I've been carrying forward those discussions internally and that's been happening, and that next year this isn't going to be lost because next year elections committee is going to meet again, we're going to make greater use of hopefully of technology, so to facilitate an elections committee which is able to not necessarily have to be all physically present in a room, which is obviously quite difficult for students, but can take decisions electronically, that sort of thing. I think that will all help a more streamlined and responsive process during the election period.
Yeah, getting on to the subject of grievances, we spoke to a couple of candidates and there was a general feel that there wasn't a very clear chain of events once they submitted their grievances. Obviously, like you said, some of them were submitted too late and they couldn't be dealt with. But, we also have kind of people who went, handed in grievance, and then maybe they felt, they even submitted, physical evidence. It was very kind of, look, I have physical evidence of this person doing physical campaigning before the, start date or whatever. And although they maybe heard later that there maybe was some action, there was no clear, right, this is what your grievance form has resulted in. Will that be something that will, hopefully be taken into greater clarification
Yes,
next year?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, just last week, the elections committee had a meeting that Rob Jennings wasn't present at because he was putting up decorations, and then Sarah Pickup was chairing the meeting, but then she had to leave for a very important finance meeting. And then apparently we had only one student who was meant to be dealing with some very heavyweight issues of, you know, during about all the NUS campaign stuff. You know, do you think Rob Jennings is maybe kind of, do you not think there was a certain level of priority given to putting up decorations versus to chairing an elections committee meeting?
Well, Rob's the activities officer and he has a responsibility to make sure that graduation ball, which is a big event attended by thousands of students.
I mean, that sounds like something you can delegate, though.
Well, okay. But Rob still has that responsibility as well. Sarah sits on reporting and finance committee of the student union, which is a governance meeting, which has delegated authority from the trustee board to look at, you know, the make sure the the student union finances, which we all depend on, every society and student group depends on, are in good health. So those were, I think, important things to be doing as well. Obviously, that is again part of the problem of elections committee, is that there were a lot of, you know, substantive items of business which came at the last minute, which did need to be dealt with.
Do you think the problem could maybe be solved if there was more of a be more considerate with responsibilities that each officer got? You know, your chair of Democratic Procedures, I mean, maybe it would have been better suited for you if, you know, maybe if you had someone else who could also, you know, chair when you weren't there. Does every single SU officer, you know, Dan Ratkin, could he not have stepped in for this, or could he not have been also a kind of deputy chair, as it were?
The way it works is at the start of the year, you know, the elections committee's its membership is itself defined in a constitutional document, and there is a very good reason that only two officers are allowed to sit on elections committee, and it's the fact that officers themselves need to be held to account.
Do you think there's enough officer accountability generally? Because, I mean, for us picking up this story, it's something that we've only discovered maybe these faults in the system, as it were, in the last couple of months, and this kind of lack of awareness maybe slightly breeds a certain you know, is like you said, with only, you know, five members not turning up to the union council, which is also meant to kind of be there as a degree of accountability. If there was better student engagement, you know, should officers therefore be held more accountable in that way?
Yeah, I think that's a fair reflection. I mean, we are, I would suggest, held to account in a more thorough way than is the case in many other student unions. So if you go back to what I was saying earlier, at lots of other student unions, they would just have a union council. That would be their one democratic meeting. And they would try and do everything there. So debate substantive items of policy, debate procedures, and hold officers to account. Here, we devolve those functions off. And I've already talked about DPC. Another subcommittee of union council is the scrutiny panel, which obviously is a committee, again, of elected students, to which I, as an officer, have to submit a written report. You can see that report. It's published online. It runs to over 20 pages. And you can read what I've been doing for the year, and I'd encourage people to do so if they've got some spare time. But I think, you know, in all seriousness, we do rely, especially on our media groups, to provide perhaps a scrutiny of officers which is slightly more succinct than the you know, lengthy documents which I have to go and explain in an oral hearing before scrutiny panel, which is a valuable process of detailed scrutiny.
But maybe not one that students find attractive.
But one which we need to marry up, I think, with, you know, engagement with, you know, groups like URN and Impact and NSTV to make sure that they're also able to play their role in scrutinising officers, because the scrutiny of us is very important. We hold power, but we do so on your behalf, and we should be accountable to you, the students.
There's one thing in regards to scrutiny panel that I'd actually just like your clarification on, because so the union council chair is also the scrutiny panel facilitator.
That is correct.
Yeah. And does that mean that the facilitator, what are their powers? So as in, if I was a member of the scrutiny panel, I mean, if I have a facilitator, does that mean that if I have a question, the facilitator can say, actually, we're not asking that today. Is that one of the powers, or is it just very much kind of administrative role? Or I'm not quite sure.
Their job is to chair the meeting, and to make sure the meeting runs to time and that sort of thing, because it's a public meeting and it's kept to 2 hours to try and make it more attractive to students to come and see us. So that's their job, is to keep the meeting to time. Their job is, and to facilitate the scrutineers to come up with the scoring process for each officer, because we get given a mark out of 10 at the end of each meeting. That's their job. Their job is not to be telling elected students what they can and can't ask. That would be quite wrong.
Okay.
We were talking earlier about the balance between, democratic procedural stuff and substantive, agenda items, and the fact that we want to get people along to these democratic meetings. And I would suggest to you that if you want to get people along to a meeting and encourage students to participate in this process of union democracy, you need to make the meeting exciting. And with all respect to hacks like myself who like talking about union procedures, that ain't going to be the case for the majority. Majority of people are going to want to come and talk about interesting things like no platforming or prevent or any of the other, should the union divest from fossil fuels or any of the other things which we've discussed at Union Council this year. And I think if you keep the Union Council agenda items to those interesting, substantive,
Something like elections is very interesting to people. We've seen a student interest there. Surely it should have been, there should have been a degree of there is an interest here. Although maybe, yes, it's more suitable for other committees. Clearly, a student's brought this.
Sure.
And there is a significant interest, and people, I think, were interested in that.
I agree with you. People were interested. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with bringing a motion to Union Council, which is about the elections process. What I think is more difficult is when that motion itself runs to pages and pages of procedural instruction, basically, to the subcommittees. And Democratic Procedures Committee, for example, which, as you alluded to earlier, I'm the chair of, exists in order that it can do this detailed scrutiny. But it is a subcommittee of Union Council. So if Union Council makes a decision that all of these procedural rules need to be enacted, then that fetters the discretion of the Democratic Procedures Committee, which is also made up of elected students who are, have greater expertise in union democracy, to actually make informed decisions. And indeed, it was very interesting when we held the meeting which you attended the other day with some of the candidates who'd signed the letter to me on Impact, the letter to the student union on Impact, saying we were wrong to, pass this meeting on to one of the other, subcommittees of Union Council. They actually, when they read the motion, didn't agree with lots of the procedural things which were being proposed.
I think that there was a certain element there of very short notice in terms of when they could, it was just Scott Jennings who was writing the motion. It wasn't a collaborative effort of 20 people. And obviously they felt that some of the motions that Scott, who probably arguably felt hard done by the 6-vote loss, there was obviously things that they weren't clear about. But I still
think, which is why we were right to give it more time to be discussed and debated.
I still think there's an issue in the fact that for a decision you make, you're right, I can hold you to account for a scrutiny panel, but for a decision which basically ensured that there would be no discussion in Union Council about electoral reform this year, it was made by someone who is unaccountable and also unelected. Just as our final question, would it be fair to say that, in short, these committees just don't have enough time to deal with the magnitude of issues that come this way, particularly this year?
I think that's an interesting question. Are you referring to the fact that there's a backlog of DPC motions in specific terms? There?
Backlog, Rob obviously not being able to meet all the elections committees, the fact that Union Council, arguably they were sub-court, of course, but, the decision to not have a Union Council meeting, kind of if there were, if there was a kind of improvement of the system, they would be able to deal with things better.
These are there's a problem generally with with democracy, I would suggest, and that needs to be, you know, addressed as a priority. You know, I think generally the structures are quite good, but the engagement with them and how we do that and the promotion around that can be much better. That backlog has occurred because the committee has suddenly found, you know, that has got a lot of work given to it as a result of a referendum. A referendum which is quite a, if I could put it, binary tool for determining actually some quite intricate procedural stuff. And I think that's possibly an earlier fault in terms of should actually we have had a should actually that business have come directly to Democratic Procedures Committee. But look, these are interesting, yeah, detailed points. I think the broader point about the promotion of democracy needing to be improved is absolutely right. And you know, I'm glad that URN are highlighting that, because I think it's important to be taken forward next year as well.